What is good, everybody? Welcome in. Welcome home to another episode of the NFC West Mixtape. I'm Rob Stats-Guerrera from the Niners Gold Standard Podcast. That's Dan Vienz from the Seahawks Forever Podcast. Dan, I don't know about you, but I could smell training camp in the air.
Rookies report to the VMAC for the Seahawks tomorrow. Veterans come in next week, but at least we will have football players on the field over the weekend. You know, when you win the Super Bowl, it's supposed to shorten the offseason, right? Or even if you play deep into the playoffs. I feel like this has been the longest summer since I've even been aware of the sport of football. And that's going back a long, long time. So let's get this going.
All right. Well, let's get this episode going. We are going to do four stats to know from the NFC West. I have done some digging and I have come up with what I think are the four most interesting stats coming out of the division. We will do one for each team. So don't worry if we haven't gotten to your favorite team. I promise we will. Since I'm a gentleman, Dan, I'm going to give you the opportunity to have the Seahawks lead off this episode, but you have to do one thing for me.
What's that?
You have to tell me who is the Seattle Seahawks career leader in interceptions.
Dave Brown.
That is incorrect. Right church, wrong pew. Dave Craig is the Seahawks leader.
Oh, you're talking quarterbacks. Okay. I thought catching interceptions is what you're talking about.
Okay. All right.
Dave Craig, also the leader in fumbles. In fact, for a while there, I think he'd fumbled more than anyone in the entire history of the NFL. I think Brett Favre finally caught him on that one at the end of his career. But
Dave Craig played in 129 games for the Seahawks, and he threw 148 interceptions.
It doesn't surprise. He was the epitome of the streaky player. When he was hot, he was as good as any quarterback in the league. When he wasn't, it was hard to watch sometimes.
I do have to give you credit because Dave Brown is the Seahawks leader in defensive interceptions. So
good.
I guess since I wasn't clear, I will start the show with the Seattle Seahawks.
Well, I have a surprise for you too, because when you sent me the stats you're going to talk about today, I came up with some complimentary stats for each one. So,
all right. Well, we'll start it off with the Seattle Seahawks. Then if you're watching on YouTube, you get to see the fancy graphic that I made.
That.
It was a tale of two offenses for Seattle last year. In the first half of the year, the passing game could not be stopped. They were second in EPA per play passing the football, but just 29th in EPA per play running the football. Then in the second half of the year, it flipped and Seattle was 21st in EPA per play passing, but all the way up to 11th in EPA per play rushing. Now, this isn't meant to be negative or complimentary. It's more just observational. What does that say to you?
At first glance, you would think that it means that, you know, teams kind of adjusted to their passing game, caught up to it. You know, of course, we all remember what happened in week 11 against the Rams with the four interceptions from Sam Darnold. To me, it's more of a signal, especially after I looked up a response for it, of the evolution of the offense. We know it was a really young offensive line. It was a new offensive coaching staff. It took a while for that to get dialed in. And we saw the improvement in the rushing game. And then you see the passing game go from second to 21st in EPA per play passing. But they got a lot more effective in play action passing in the second half as a direct result of that run. I know there's people out there that will tell you, you don't have to be successful running the football for play action passing to work, but I've always believed that the better you do run the football, the better chance you have to succeed in play action passing. And Seattle for the entire season was the NFL's most efficient play action passing offense. But in particular, they averaged 9.3 adjusted net yards per attempt from 12 personnel. And they were the only team in the league to average more than 10 yards per play action pass. And so while the raw numbers were down, they were more effective when they decided to fake a run first. So the message to new offensive coordinator Brian Fleury is clear: more play action passing.
Well, I think, and there's a lot of different ways you can look at it, right? If you want to hate on Sam Darnold, you could say, hey, defense is adjusted to what the Seahawks were doing, and he became a lot less effective passer in the second half of the year. But I think it's more, it is an adjustment, and maybe they did start to adjust, but I think Seattle then said, okay, if you want to play Sam Darnold this way, then we are going to run the ball. So if you're going to try to take away the pass, we're going to run the ball better and more explosively. And that's what they did. So I don't necessarily look at it as a negative on Sam Darnold. I just look at it as a positive with Kubiak, who said, great, this is what you're going to do. I'm going to do the opposite.
He found answers. He had a response. You know, there was a period of time, I'd say 3 or 4 weeks off the top of my head, after that week 11 debacle in LA, where it did seem they were a little bit more conservative and Sam was taking less shots down the field. Mm-hmm. But then that running game really came to life. And in particular, from week 15 on, which coincided with the return of Jalen Sundell. He was on the injured list for 4 weeks. He came back week 15. Up until that point, they were averaging 3.9 yards per carry in the running game. From that point forward, they averaged almost 4.5 yards per carry, a full half yard more. And so, look, if they hadn't made that adjustment, they don't win the Super Bowl. And so it was that running game coming alive there down the stretch and in the playoffs that really enabled them to do that.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
If I could spin this forward for a minute, I know it's tough to answer, obviously, because you don't know about Flurry and what he's going to do. But if I had to ask you to make a prediction about the first, let's say, 8 games of this season, do you think that the offense will be better running the football or passing the football?
Probably running the football. I know there's some uncertainty about who's going to be running the football in that running back room. But I think anytime you have continuity like they do on the offensive line, all 5 starters returning, all 5 key backups returning, the offensive line coach and the run game coordinator all coming back, it feels like that's kind of where it starts. And we're hearing things about Brian Flurry incorporating a lot more motion, and then his offense in some ways maybe even more complex than Clint Kubiak's. And so, yeah, if you can get that running game going early, I do think the run-pass splits are going to be close to 50-50-ish as they were with Kubiak last year. I would hope anyway, maybe this is just wishful thinking, that that's the first thing that we'll kind of see right out of the gate.
All right, so that is the Seahawks part of this. I will give you the opportunity to have the Rams go next, if you can answer. This should be, I'm hoping that you have an easy answer to this question. If you could name any player that has played for both the Seattle Seahawks and the Rams.
I mean, I'll go Cooper Kupp. Let's just get that out of the way.
Ah, that's too easy by me. Uh-huh. Didn't think that one through. All right. Rams are up next. And the number on the Rams that jumped out to me was the fact that the run game was the unsung hero of the offense. They were 2nd in success rate on run plays last year, and they were 1st in run DVOA, which led to them facing the shortest distance on 3rd down in the NFL. The Rams were great at running the football, and we never got any attention put on it because of Matt Stafford, Puka Nacua, and Devontae Adams.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the really underrated things about Sean McVay and some of the adjustments that he's made and the evolution of his offense over the last 3 or 4 years. And I feel like in 2024, this got a lot of attention, right? He went away from being so reliant on the wide zone scheme and the more of the athletic offensive linemen. They went bigger up front, started running more duo and gap power stuff. But I think Matthew Stafford had such a great year last year, obviously wins the MVP, and that sort of overshadowed the fact that they still were, as you point out here, really effective running the football. I think that's the key to that whole offense. I will say this, though. When I did a little digging, I found this really interesting, and you might be surprised to hear this. So even though they had the shortest distance to go on 3rd down in the entire NFL last year, they weren't very good at converting those 3rd and shorts. They were 17th in the league, successful only 39.6% of the time on 3rd down. However, they were also among the league leaders, top 11 in the league in going for it on 4th down. And they were actually better on 4th down conversions than they were on 3rd down, converting 67%, 2/3 of all their 4th down attempts. So yeah, when you're big and strong up front like they are, I think guard to guard, they're about 1,000 pounds of interior offensive lineman up there when Steve Avila is playing center. That's, and I don't know if that's going to be the configuration this year. I think Avila might be playing guard, but it's, it just gives you those advantages when you have someone like Matt Stafford, you have to, that keeps you honest, that you have to respect, but they can also really be physical in the run game and ram it down your throat. That's a dangerous combination.
First of all, I feel like you're a stat one upper, so thanks for that. But
I mean, you teed me up for it, so you shouldn't have given away the script ahead of time.
One other sneaky part of this, I think, where that works to the Rams' advantage is if you have the shortest distance to go on third down, you're not asking Matt Stafford to drop back, you know, take a five-step, seven-step drop, look at the defense, go through the reads. He can get the ball out of his hands super fast on the most important down, which is going to help him not take hits. It's going to help him not get sacked. It's going to help him stay healthy and stay on the field. The Rams, they're so freaking smart, man. It's so frustrating when the teams in your division are so good and so smart. But we know McVay likes to run the ball. He loved to run the ball when Todd Gurley was there. Turns out he still likes to run the ball, even with a great quarterback, and they're still very good at it.
And that's why their offense is so dangerous. You know, you think of that Week 16 game that went to overtime, the classic between the Seahawks and the Rams, and the Seahawks shut their running game down. There were some sparks. There were some decent runs early in the game, but then they really closed it down. Didn't matter. We'll just throw it with Matthew Stafford and Puka Nacua and Devontae Adams, and we'll just rack up 550 yards on you. So they're just so multifaceted. They can beat you in so many different ways.
There is not a style of fight that they can't win. And I think, honestly, the same thing goes for the Seahawks. Whatever kind of game is necessary, they can play. If it's going to be a grinded out game, they can do that. If it's going to be a shootout, they're more than happy to go to the OK Corral. So that's why those two teams, I think, are seen as the best two in the league. It is not surprising. It is well earned. And we'll see, obviously, if they can repeat that again next season. All right, two teams down. Two to go here in the NFC West. We'll get to the 49ers and the Cardinals in a minute, but first.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
All right, next team. You know what? Let's show the Arizona Cardinals a little bit of love. As much as it pains me to hold my 49ers to
last. I'm not sure it's love, though, based on your stat.
Well, look, I can't make it up. All I can do is say what the facts are.
Yeah.
I mean, they were injured everywhere last year, but specifically along the offensive line. Their most used offensive line combination last year played less than 24% of the snaps.
That's crazy. And
that's the most used one. That's the most continuity they had. They allowed the fifth most sacks in the NFL, and their leading rusher last year, Dan, and this is crazy, Michael Carter led the Cardinals in rushing with 333 yards.
Yeah. That's got to be the lowest leading rusher we've seen in quite some time. That's pretty remarkable. And you know, you can in a vacuum just say, well, hey, having a bad offensive line sucks, and it makes it hard to have a functional offense. But it all, you know, we hear the term complementary football all the time. I guess what's the opposite of complementary football? Insulting football, I suppose, is what it would be, because they were so bad defensively also. 26th in defensive EPA last year. Their defense allowed 4,200 passing yards and 31 passing touchdowns. Their defense basically allowed an all-pro quarterback's worth of stats for the year. And so, yeah, you're always playing from behind. You're having to throw the football, and you have that kind of lack of continuity in the offensive line. That's a tough recipe.
And, you know, we sometimes don't talk about the Cardinals as much as we do other teams on this show. I will say that there are some pieces there to like. And so you maybe think if they weren't so crippled by injuries, maybe they would have been a lot better. When I saw that offensive line number, I was like, man, no wonder they couldn't get anything going. 333 yards on the ground. I thought the 49ers run game was bad. That's like 3 weeks for Derrick Henry.
And they added to it in the draft this year. I think Chase Besantis, wasn't he their second round pick out of Texas A&M? He's a guard that I like. Yes. And so they've addressed that. And, you know, Paris Johnson, they drafted in the first round a couple of years ago. So they've got some pieces to work with there on the offensive line. But again, we've talked about this on the show. They did not invest in that defense either through the draft or really to any significant effect in free agency. And so those numbers that I just stated, like if that doesn't get better, it doesn't matter how much better you get on offense, which takes me back again to, you know, how much I question that Jeremiah Love pick when you have the third pick in the draft and your biggest problem is defense. That just seems like a strange use of a high draft pick resource when you have so many other holes in your roster.
And they did not fire their defensive coordinator. So they're really banking on injuries being the reason that they struggled. And boy, did they struggle. Yeah. I mean, 22nd in yards per play allowed, 27th in yards per game, 27th in pressure rate, 28th in sack rate, 29th in points per drive allowed, 30th in points per game allowed. And you kept that guy. Yeah. So, okay, you're saying it was all due to injuries. And you facing three other offenses in the division that we know can put up points. So that's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him. One more team to go.
Who might that be?
That would be my San Francisco 49ers. Mm-hmm. The stat I had for them was the lack of interior pass rush. And not just sacks. I'm talking anything resembling a pass rush. Last year for the 49ers, Jordan Elliott led all defensive tackles on the team with 16 pressures. That's wow. It. Less than one a game. He was the team leader. The Seahawks had 3 defensive tackles on their team that had more than that. And all whatever number of defensive tackles on the Niners roster as a unit last year only produced 47 pressures, which is less than Osa Odighizuwa, who they just traded for.
Yeah, and we've talked about it quite a bit on this show. I think that was really one of the more under the radar, maybe not talked about offseason moves that I think is going to really show to pay off during the season. You talk about getting Nick Bosa back and Mykel Williams coming back from injury in his second year and all those other young guys you've drafted on the interior and Alfred Collins and CJ West. But Odighizuwa is a guy that can get after the quarterback and he's proven it, right? He's done it. And to get a guy like that for a third round pick in a weak draft class just seemed like a really shrewd move in an otherwise fairly quiet offseason for those guys. And they need it. They allowed a 48.1% offensive success rate last year, one of the worst marks in football. You mentioned only the 29 sacks, 24th in defensive EPA per play. I have become a believer over the last couple of years that, you know, we focus so much on the premium positions, right? That the guys off the edge, the big time pass rushers, and they make a ton of money. If you can get interior pressure consistently, you're making the quarterback have to move off his spot. You're disrupting that quarterback. You're making him have to go off script. I think it's much more effective and dangerous to have to face that as an offense than it is a guy coming off the edge.
And it's so much harder for those guys coming off the edge to make an impact if there's no pressure whatsoever up the middle, because mm-hmm. every quarterback is taught pressure off the edge, step up into the pocket.
Yeah.
And if there's pressure, then there's nowhere for the quarterback to go. But if you're the Niners and you have Jordan Elliott there, who basically just was an observer, I mean, you're letting quarterbacks step up, step into throws, or take off and run. You're basically giving them an alleyway to take off and run, because if your edges are getting pressure, there's gaps there for you to run through. So it was a huge problem for the 49ers. It has been a problem for them since really DeForest Buckner left. They haven't had somebody in the middle that could provide that type of pressure. So here's hoping Osa Odighizuwa can do it. Like I said, he had 52 pressures last season just by himself. So, and he also had more sacks than every 49ers defensive tackle from last year combined as well. So it was a massive, massive upgrade that was sorely, sorely needed.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a bunch of teams out there in the NFL that could use a penetrating interior defensive lineman that are probably kicking themselves for not offering a second round pick for Odighizuwa. Cause I don't think anyone would have batted an eye at that.
Yeah, to get him for a third. I mean, as soon as the deal came through, I was like, what? Did that really just happen? Yeah. Usually we're the one making the bad trades in a lot of ways, but that was one good one for the 49ers, and hopefully that flips this season.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this. Now, without further commercial interruption, the conclusion of this episode of the 49ers Gold Standard podcast.
All right, Dan, that is it. That is my 4 stats for each team. How did we do?
I think we did well. I think you lived up to your nickname.
Okay, good.
That was good stuff. And a good way to close out, I think we can say we've officially closed out the offseason, because when we get together next week, we'll get to actually talk about training camp storylines. I can't wait.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. Look, I love this job. I've always said I love this job. I will never, ever take it for granted for a single day. But I always tell people, they always say, is it harder in the off season or is it harder during the season? I was like, there's more work during the season because there's more going on, but it's harder in the off season, especially the last month, because everybody kind of takes the month off and goes on vacation, and we don't. We're here for you.
That's right. We did every single week throughout the summer. I don't know how many shows can say that, that do a weekly show, but the best ability is availability. We say it all the time, and we're available to you every Thursday right here on the NFC West Mixtape.
That's right. So if you want the best Seahawks coverage, go to Seahawks Forever on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel. My channel is the 49ers Gold Standard Podcast on YouTube. I'll put our coverage up against any 49ers show out there. I promise if you give us a chance, you will like what you see. Like this video on both channels. Subscribe to both channels, as I said. Thank you, Dan. And we'll talk to everybody next week.